What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Today we're talking about the lover archetype, and of course with me as always is Amy Zander. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kevin. This is great that we're doing the lover a week before Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Ooh, do you and Francie celebrate Valentine's Day? Do you do anything?
Oh, of course.
You do? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're one of those cheesy college romance couples.
Yeah, we're kind of, you know, if you hang around us too much, you'll get diabetes. It's syrupy, sickeningly
sweet.
You guys are really cute.
What are you doing? Do you do anything?
I don't know. We haven't actually planned anything yet. We've just been so busy with the move. But we will definitely, at the very minimum, go out for a really, really nice dinner.
Nice.
Movie and that kind of thing. Good. But, you know, we usually plan something. So.
Yeah.
So, happy Super Bowl day. Did you watch the game?
Oh, every riveting moment of sports ball, Kevin. No.
Yeah.
No,
sports
I didn't.
Ball.
No.
No sports.
Didn't even know who was playing. Didn't care. Didn't go to a party.
being the brand and, the marketing dude, I only watch for the commercials.
Oh, well, yeah. I Google those.
Did you hear about the commercials?
Yeah, of course. For sure.
Oh, my gosh. The Jeep commercial, the Groundhog Day Redux. Oh, that was just awesome. Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Did you see any that you especially liked?
I don't know. They were all pretty good.
Yeah, the Jason Momoa one with where he pulls off his big muscles and his
right
is bald.
That
was hilarious. Okay, so me bringing it up at all, I the whole reason I brought it up is it's a brand thing, but isn't it interesting how in the context of Super Bowl commercials, because of how much notoriety and influence the whole concept of Super Bowl commercials, they're crazy expensive, right?
Right.
And the big question has always been, do they actually do anything? But what's more interesting to me is how much they have all massively shifted to the jester archetype. It just seems like, you know, I guess if you're putting your commercial in front of a people who are supposed to be having fun and, you know, watching a football game, that kind of makes sense. But the big switch over to so many brands adopting the jester archetype, I think, is very interesting, and some wildly successful and some not so. So I just think that would be an interesting topic to discuss, of why we see so much movement towards some of these archetypes and not others when they're all so powerful. So
right. That and, you know, you have to play to your audience to some degree with your marketing for your messaging and things like that, but your overall, you know, message should always be your archetype, so you don't have that flip-flopping or diluting your brand issue, which is what we talk about all the time, which is the whole reason for picking an archetype and sticking to it, is to creating that really strong brand. And
and
if you do it correctly, you shouldn't have to change that overall message depending on your product, your service, your audience, what your medium that you're going through, should all pretty much be the same. So that is, we should explore that more. That is a really interesting shift.
Yeah, even there is even one now. It's not going to surprise you much. Was it Rocket Mortgage? Yeah, Rocket Mortgage. It was Hulu. It had a commercial with Tom Brady in it. You know, go blue, University of Michigan quarterback, Patriots, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so the commercial starts out in black and white, and it's all serious, and he's talking about quitting, and it's like, okay, all of the rumors for years about Tom Brady quitting, it's like, oh my gosh, is he actually going to announce his retirement at the Super Bowl in a commercial? And then it goes on, And then you find out that he's quitting cable and he's going to switch to Hulu.
Right.
And so it was all serious right up until that last little bit. And then they zoom in on him. He says, I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Right.
So it was a little gestury at the end.
Right. Or outlaw, maybe.
Yeah, it felt very outlawish up until that point.
All right. So let's dive into The Lover.
Very good. Okay, so the big idea of the lover, is building meaningful relationships for sure. And a lot of lover archetype brands, they will focus on this, you know, friendships and relationships, loving relationships. But really, I think the most successful lover archetypes focus on the keyword of passion. Even if it's sexual passion or romantic passion, it's still very passionate. So if you're passionate about your products, your services, your ideas, your customers, a process, getting a message out, if you're passionate about anything, then this might be a very good archetype for you.
That's true. And I just want to preface this too by saying that the lover archetype can be about sex, because sex sells, clearly has for, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years, but that's not the only thing that this archetype is about, which we will talk about as we go.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about individual archetypes, the name of the archetype, you know, for example, the magician archetype is about transformation, and sometimes we refer to it as the butterfly because the metamorphosis of a butterfly has a little bit better of a connotation than the magician, which kind of connotes, you know, old dude, white beard, pointy hat, star on the end of a stick.
Or like trickery, sleight of hand, which isn't really what it's about. Or when we talked last episode about how that caregiver versus caretaker for the mother, which could sound like an undertaker.
Yeah.
So there definitely are nuances to the words that are chosen to depict the different archetypes, and the lover is the one to make sure you understand that it's not just about sex.
Right.
Yeah.
And people do say lover. I don't know. I'm not a lover. I'm a fighter. No, hold on. No, that's something else.
Right.
But you're right. The tone of just reading the word, don't read too much into it. It really is about passion and relationships.
Well, right. And I always use the example of one of our mutual clients, which is a hunting organization. And we walked them through the brand discovery session together. And this was earlier on when you and I started working together. So I was newer at this. And I was really surprised that this group of like older, middle-aged to retirement, mostly white guys that like to hunt, picked the lover. I was like, really? But you weren't surprised because you're like, no, people who are passionate about hunting are really passionate about hunting.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And
and
they are. And not only is the hunting, but they're in, you know, advocacy and conservation and all that good stuff. But
all you have to do is bring up the Second Amendment to find out how passionate they really are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, so the lover, talking about the names, can also be known as the seducer, matchmaker, partner, the intimate, the connector, companion, the hedonist, the gigolo, the friend, or the sensualist.
Yeah, and they all have kind of a sexy kind of sound to them, except partner, intimate, those are a little bit more romantic. So let's talk about the sub-archetypes. It doesn't really matter what word you pick as long as you understand the concept, but when we have worked with brands that have chosen the lover archetype, we've realized that there's basically two flavors. The first we're calling the gigolo, which focuses on the sex side. And the second is the cupid, which focuses on the romance side. But again, both of them are very passionate about what they do and the products and all of that. So the gigolo is focuses on sex, and it's, you know, the hot, steamy, seducing, ooh la la, you know, so you have that. Any picture, almost any perfume commercial or lots of fashion, you know, women's shoes and, you know, women's wear and things like that.
There are a
lot of them focus on sex to sell. The cupid, on the other hand, focuses on the romance, and it's, you know, that deeper, meaningful, it's love-infused, you got the sparkle in the eye, and it's all about a little softer, warmer, you know, less steamy, but still very, you know, romantically warm, and it, you know, should fill you with good feelings and stuff.
Right.
So now we've got those two types, those two flavors of archetypes. Let's go through some examples.
Yeah, so I'll tackle the gigolo or the seducer. I like that word. One. So one of the most well-known and powerful versions of this archetype is Victoria's Secret.
Of course.
Yeah, so that's definitely the sexy ooh la la one that you were saying. You know, I don't, that doesn't need a whole lot of further explanation.
No,
and then continuing with, fashion. So Calvin Klein jeans, those are, you know, pretty sexy. It's just a lot of pictures of butts.
Oh yeah. Remember the early days when Brooke Shields as teenager first came out and she's like,
she was hot. Oh yeah. But that was new for Tiger. Yeah. That was.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was very, very controversial.
Yeah.
Should you have a young lady so young be doing that kind of level of adult sexuality?
Right.
Big changes there. Yep.
Yeah. So there's Tiffany is another one. Chanel, which is again what you're saying, like perfumes and things like that. And I would say that, like, historically, a lot of alcohol and beer were the lover, and that's another industry that we have seen shift a lot more to the jester.
Right.
I think a lot more of them, like, you know, Budweiser has the, they had the frogs. Remember, they had those for a while. Right. That was really gestury or whatever.
Because we are all sexier when we drink alcohol.
That's true. I am.
So, there's Kevin's jester coming out.
Right. But yeah, so we didn't really have a lot of those on the list of examples. They're out there, but it's not as predominant of an industry like it once was.
Right.
Yeah.
So, well, let me cover the Cupid then. So the romance side of things, I would absolutely add Hallmark cards.
Yeah.
Even though
Hallmark Channel movies, come on.
Oh,
totally.
Yeah. Well, I saw a great Facebook post a couple of months ago during the holiday season. And it was something like, what has 10 actors, 2 producers, and 1 plot line?
The Hallmark
and the
Channel.
Answer was all Hallmark movies.
Right, but yet they have their reasons and their
stuff. Oh yeah, it's definitely formulaic, but it works.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really want to watch a you know, brain dead, just sit down and, you know, immerse yourself until your fingers get pruny, kind of romantic. You know, hour and a half, then that's awesome.
I think the Bachelor and the Bachelorette shows are similar to that.
Yeah, a little bit more sex there. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so other ones would be like eHarmony.
Like all the dating apps, pretty much, right? Yeah.
Yep. And so where fashion, you sell via sex because you can get away with scantily clad people and, you know, buff, ripped, six-pack guys diving into pools and things like that.
Butts.
Butts, yeah, right? But food, it's not sexual, but it's definitely this passion, right? And so it falls into this more romantic side of things where it's like, oh, I love my chocolate, like Godiva chocolate.
Mm.
Or Häagen-Dazs ice cream is another great example
of,
you know, they're like, oh, I just love my Häagen-Dazs,
right?
Yeah,
and I think the lover archetype could be really powerful for some restaurants.
Oh, absolutely.
Things like that. I've worked with a few different restaurants that adopted that archetype, and it was really, really successful because everybody can be super passionate about what they eat,
right? Yeah. So we have mutual clients, you know, and I think that you and I would agree that there are some industries like restaurants, anything having to do with food, are super easy to market.
They are.
Just because people are so passionate about their food. Now, whether you pick the lover or not is academic, but definitely people are into food. You know, other things like travel and hobbies and pets. You know, pick things that people are super intensely passionate about, and you've got a no-brainer of picking the archetype, unless, of course, everybody else in that space is using the lover as well.
Right.
You would want to try to avoid that.
Right.
Okay. Let's do a SWOT analysis.
Let's talk
about the pros first.
Yeah. So as we mentioned, the lover brand taps into people's passions. And that was a good segue because you were talking about, think about things that people are really, really passionate about. And if you think about it, everyone is passionate about something, may not be the same thing all the time. One person might really care about food and some person won't. But you're always going to find your niche, the people that are really passionate about what it is that you do.
And that's a beautiful thing about social media is it is so easy to find people worldwide who are also passionate about the same things you are. You know, if I was hanging out in my hometown and trying to find people who are super, super into, you know, custom-made, hand-ground Indian spices, you know, that's...
Right.
I'm probably not going to find anybody in this town. But how many people worldwide are into that same thing? I can find Facebook groups and networks and people all over the world that...
There's a big push for Facebook groups right now, and they have a lot. I've seen a lot of advertising out there of finding people that love what you love, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
one of the pro sides to social media, right?
Yeah,
connecting people.
Right. There is still one.
Right. Yeah. And the ads.
And the ads, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. But very strong emotions will drive people to do things and buy things that they really want. So tapping into that in marketing is an age-old tactic, and it still works.
Sure.
Yeah, and I
noticed that you didn't use the word need.
They want.
Right. Wanted. I need to breathe and I need to drink water, but I want chocolate.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
You could say that it's a need, but it really is.
Yeah, true. You might feel like you really need it or you might die, but yeah.
Right.
And the Lover brand helps people recognize their passions if they're not super connected to them, and it taps into the heart of the matter with things like that. So it is, you know, love is and passion is a very powerful emotion. So so you have a lot of really good pros or strengths there with the Lover.
Right. So let's talk about some weaknesses. So if I am choosing the Lover brand, a weakness is that your success depends on how you portray your intense passion. And it is a fairly high energy archetype. You know, when you go to the romance side, the Cupid side, it's a little less intense. It's a little less energetic. But passion is passion. And if you're really successfully tapping into this, you're gonna do that. So a weakness is if a person finds that things are bland, they're lifeless, they're meaningless, they're boring. That's the opposite of passion, and that is definitely a weakness of the Lover archetype if it's possible for you to fall into that, right? And like we just talked about, the wants versus need. If a person is if a competitor brand successfully taps into needs, and you're really tapping into the passionate wants, you may come across as superficial, and that would be a weakness as well. So it really depends on how people are playing off of you and how you are playing off of them. But boy, let me tell you, this is one of the easier archetypes, because when you successfully tap into people's passions, you hook them. You hook them hard, and it's a very, very powerful connection. Once you do it well.
That is very true. Yeah. So your opportunities that come along, in addition to that, are if your competitors are like low key or boring, or their marketing is just really not that jazzy, it's not producing that much emotion, the Lover one could really come out of left field and take them over and grab a lot of attention. So it could be the formula that sparks interest within your target audience if your competition isn't doing that. Yeah. It definitely is, like you said, it's higher energy. It's not one of the lower key archetypes. So that's good. And so by focusing on your passions, your target audience will feel inspired, special, and invigorated. And again, that you're tapping into that emotion that does drive a lot of purchases.
Yeah. Motivating powers.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know that when people are passionate, they are motivated to do things like buy products and services.
Right.
Yeah. So threats. Last bit is, in the future, if I were to worry about, you know, the kinds of bad things that could happen to my brand, we talked about being stuck or boring or, you know, ineffective, you know, we lose our passion. That's really where you want to avoid. So you kind of constantly have to tend to this concept of passion so that you don't veer off the tracks, right? So really the biggest threat is mediocrity, you know, being average, being lackluster, just being seen as, you know, yeah, whatever.
Right.
You can't be passionate about something that is boring to you. You just can't. So if you allow your messaging, if allow your social media marketing, allow your content creation to be boring because you're talking about yourself and not tapping into these your target audience's passion, then you've failed, and this threat of failure is really what you're trying to keep your eye on, right?
That's true. I know a woman who works for a local insurance company where they help people figure out their personal healthcare through the marketplace and things like that when they have to purchase their own healthcare plans. And to me, you know, that's not super exciting. It's insurance, we need it, but I don't really want to think about it. But mm-hmm. she is one of the most passionate people I've ever met about helping people with this particular issue. And I run into her at networking events. I know her, I've worked with her, and she never wanes. She's always like, I love my job. I love helping people. I want people to get health coverage. And I was like, wow, like you really are the whole package with this lover thing. And she means it. It comes across sincerely, you know.
I've worked with insurance companies before, and other than, you know, they are so heavily, tightly bound and handcuffed by their legal teams.
Yeah, regulations.
The kinds of things, right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, SEC and investment companies have the same kind of thing. But selling insurance, most people don't want to even think about insurance. They just, it's a negative thing in their mind. I'm only doing it because I have to. But good marketing in the insurance industry is exactly what you were just saying. If you can get the person beyond that hurdle of thinking or talking about it, what you find is that they're insuring something that they're very passionate about, their family, their expensive car. I mean, how many people are super passionate about their amazing, you know, 1968, you know, convertible Mustang that's Cherry and, you know, Rick.
Yeah. Prius.
Or their Prius, or their six Priuses.
Or their matching Priuses in their cute little driveway.
Oh, come on. For the listeners who don't know, my wife and I both drive Priuses.
They're cute. They match. They're very cute.
They're very cute.
Just
they're
like
not
you guys.
Great for hauling stuff. Let me tell you, I'm finding that out for sure. But holy, I love the 50 miles per gallon. Gotta love that.
For sure. Yeah.
I'm pretty passionate about that 50 miles per gallon.
Well, and your eco-friendly car. Like, that's part of it too, right?
Well, since I do have a degree in biology and I was an environmental consultant, I kind of feel that there is a need for sensitivity to the environment.
Right.
And I shouldn't have to explain myself, Amy.
No, I wasn't asking you to. I think your cars are cute.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of these words that are associated with the lover archetype. We'll start with the first one, the sexy gigolo one. So these are going to be words like blistering and breathless and decadent, desire, ecstasy, explode, forbidden, haunting, heated, hypnotic, you know, all the things that they say in the Victoria's Secret ads, right? All those great words. And then the romantic, Cupid, Hallmark kind of side of it could be more like beloved, charismatic, cuddly, cute, dear, dreamlike, my Valentine, velvety, warm, wispy.
And listen to how, you know, even the way that you said those, the tone of the two
lists help it.
is dramatically different.
Yeah.
And yet they all fall right directly into the pocket of the lover archetype.
Right.
So any verbs that we can tap into?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Verbs for lover. Crave, desire, enthrall, frolic, ravish, romp, tease, yearn. Those are all good ones.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
And, of course, we have our word bank. If you have decided that you're going to try to be a lover archetype and want to have many, many hundreds and hundreds of words and phrases and verbs and power words to sprinkle throughout your content creation, we can help you. $29.95, we can pass along our word bank list that's been in production and being edited over the course of the last decade and a half. And constantly changing and growing and being edited to refine it even more. But that's where all these words came from, and many, many, many hundreds more. So if you want to avoid the work involved in trying to come up with all of those awesome words for your content, then just give us a shout. So each time we do this, we talk about how this one archetype that we're focusing on can go up against others. And this is no different. So let's talk about how the lover archetype can go up against, let's just pick a couple. Let's start with the ruler archetype. It's kind of obvious. if you think about someone who is passionate about something and you're trying to build a great relationship, whether it's a sexual relationship or a romantic relationship or just an intense friendship or, you know, a relationship with my car, or it doesn't matter what it is, the opposite of that would be someone who doesn't really care about relationships at all.
Or feelings.
Or feelings, right. you know, the ruler. The right. ruler is all about dominance and power. It's not about relationships at all. And the ruler can come off as very uncaring and insensitive. So if you have a competitor who is a ruler, wow, way easy to go up against him with the lover archetype. Very similarly, the guru is more concerned about data and information and processes and methods and information and experience and knowledge, all that stuff that oozes through the guru. And because of that, they can kind of seem boring and emotionless sometimes, but there's this high level of trustworthiness because of all of that knowledge and information. They're just not really people. They don't come across as relationship kind of people. And that's a very easy play for a lover to go up against someone like that. The neighbor, I kind of see the neighbor as it's someone who you have a friendly relationship with. You know, you're in the friend zone. But but it has nothing to do with the more intense, passionate, the sexual romance side of relationships. It's just buddies, right? So if you have this competitor that's a neighbor and they're portraying themselves successfully there, your opportunity is, well, they're just not as into it as you are. You know, side with us because we're really into your passions, where those other people, not so much.
Take it to the next level, yeah.
Exactly right. And the last one I would pick, let's say innocent, because they're just innocent. Innocent archetypes like Coca-Cola, let's say. You know, you think about having a Coca-Cola on a hot summer day when you're a kid, right? Really easy image to conjure for most people because that was part of your upbringing. And when you do that, it elicits immediately very childlike memories and childlike feelings. Well, childlike anything isn't adult-like, and sex and romance are very purely adult emotions. And so the innocent and the lover play against each other that way.
Right. So, Kevin, would you say that, like, I know we don't generally give the advice to anybody if they're in a particular industry, they should be a particular archetype because they all work well. But would you say that if you are working in an industry that is predominantly catering to children, like, say, toys or clothes or something like that, that how would you use the lover, or would you recommend going maybe the innocent or something else? What would you
know? You're not going to be really surprised. Any archetype can be used for any product,
right,
or industry. It's whether it's really more about the competition where you're going to have your conflict. So let's say you have a child, a children's toy company that wants to focus on passion, right?
Right.
Well, what are kids passionate about?
Yeah.
About?
Fun.
It's okay. So you have to be careful not to go too gestury.
Sure.
If you go there. But it is the passion of fun, the passion of learning, the passion of play.
Right.
Now, when you watch kids on a playground playing, is it high energy?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You can't have a playground full of kids without them running around going crazy. And there's this joyousness and this intensity that falls within the lover. You just have to be careful not to be too adult. You have to be careful,
right,
not to imply sexuality at all in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's good advice. Cool, thanks.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about overlapping archetypes, because several of them are similar in certain ways, and you got to make sure that you understand the distinction if you are solely choosing one. So some of them, they have some similarities. Let's see. We recently talked about the hero. So the hero has a lot of passion for right versus wrong and justice and that kind of thing. So it's a different type of focused passion. So you have to make sure that you're clear about what kind of passion you're talking about if you're the lover, and not wandering over to like the hero side of the passion.
Super high energy.
Yep. Both of them. Sure. And then the artist, which is one that we haven't mentioned a whole lot and we haven't covered as its own podcast yet. So if you aren't familiar with the artist, or sometimes it's called the creator, you can head on over to our website, which is brandarchetypes.com, and check out the artist page if you want to hear a little bit more or read a little bit more about that. But the creative folks tend to be pretty emotionally driven versus logical driven or logic driven. And so,
it's that side of their brain.
Yeah, that creative passion side. Sure, the artist side. And those emotions tend to fall in line with the passionate emotions of the lover, but artist is not as energetic as passion or as the lover, and also doesn't have that sex or romance side necessarily to it. It does have the same kind of feel. And hands down, artists and creators are passionate about what they do.
Now, I have a fine artist client in Florida, and this is one of the discussions that we had with her is you know, the obvious archetype that she shouldn't pick is the artist.
Right.
Because she's going up against other artists who are all naturally going to want to talk about how creative they are and how, you know, the process of their creations and, you know, the benefit of their creations. And it's all about creativity, blah, 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 right? Well, if you're going to go head to head with a whole bunch of artists, don't do that. And to pick the passion for the artistry. That's probably the next most likely pick. And when she's taking a look at her competitors online and who she thinks she's going up head-to-head against locally, she decided that they were all doing the artist and that the lover was going to be a very good focus for her. So passion for art.
Yeah, and that's got to be really powerful because it's enough of a shift to make a difference, but still stay within her comfort zone and personality where she can really kill it with that brand.
Right. And she can kill it because it's easy, you know.
Right.
Passion for art is not a hard thing to adopt if
right.
you're an artist.
And artists are often, you know, the face of their, it's like a personal brand versus a company brand because they are the artist. So it has to be about them too, not just their company. And so I could see where that shift would be really powerful.
Okay, so I have not told you this, but one of the hobbies that I'll be tapping into as I start to slow down, not retire, I don't think I'm ever going to really truly retire. It'll be at least another 2 or 3 years before I even slow down to where people would say that I'm retired. But I definitely want to start picking up art. I mean, I have a minor in fine art, and I've always woefully neglected those skills and that creative outlet. You know, thank goodness there is the creative side of the internet that has kind of helped me tap into that part of my brain, which was so needed back when I was an environmental consultant and reading OSHA and EPA regulations for 40 hours a week. I just wanted to die. It was terrible.
I bet. Because
the creative side of my brain just was so yearning to escape.
Right.
And get out of that. And so now here, looking at slowing down a little bit. I am definitely going to start doing more art, woodworking and glass and drawing and painting and stuff like that. And I just in the last week, I have started evaluating what will my brand be. Of course, I'm going to do that, right?
Right.
And
you
so
mean as an artist?
As an artist, yeah. So I'm creating a whole new brand, a new name, and portraying it online. And I was deciding on whether I was going to go with Kevin Skerritt as the brand. Or is a personal brand artist, or if I was going to actually create a new name with a, you know, a more formal approach. And which archetype do you think I picked?
Well, I mean, everything you've done is generally Jester, although no, brand archetype is not. So I don't know.
Jester.
You did? Yeah.
Yeah,
well, that makes sense. Well, you know, Kevin, as you were telling me about this, like I was thinking that like, you're one of those people that are pretty good at whatever you try to do. Like I've seen that duck wood carving that you made your dad, and I've heard you play music, and I've seen other things that you've attempted. And you're just one of these creative people that like when you first try something, you're already like pretty good at it, if not really good at it.
Well,
So I could see where that would be a big important part of your life.
Yeah. And I actually did
It wasn't a huge struggle, but I did struggle a little bit about with this decision. You know, is the artist or the creator archetype better for this kind of thing? And of course, the answer is no because of the competition. But then the next obvious thing is, well, for me, it might be obvious if you know me that I was going to pick Jester, but that's not a slam dunk decision. Right. You know, should I pick something else? I spent a couple of days evaluating that. And when I actually get the brand approach a little bit more formalized, I will roll it out and I'll let you know what it
cool.
is and everything.
Yeah, so, that'll be fun to see for sure.
Okay, well, that's the lover archetype. And I noticed that in our queue of archetypes that we're reviewing here, we talked about the big four, the neighbor, the hero, the jester, the mother, and we skipped over the neighbor archetype. And we did the lover this week, and I don't know why we did that. So let's go back to that and finish off the big four with the neighbor archetype next week.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Okay. All right. Talk to you next week. Thanks,
Have a good one. Yep. Bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.